Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Linda Washington, Assistant Secretary for Administration at the U.S. Department of Transportation. Also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Pete Boyer. Linda, we talk with many of our guests about collaboration. What kinds of partnerships are you developing now to improve operations or outcomes at DOT, and how might these partnerships change over time?
You know, we have several interfaces and collaborate with many individuals and groups. We have an Administrative Management Council, which I personally chair, which is comprised of senior executives from each of our operating administrations. We collaborate on all types of services that are needed and how we should deliver those services, and we even talk about the cost of those services. There is also the Human Resources Council, the Procurement Management Council, and we have a Diversity Advisory Council. Each of these groups identifies issues and works together to plan for the future. We also at DOT participate in government-wide councils, such as OPM's Chief Human Capital Officers Council and OMB's Federal Real Property Planning Council. We also recently partnered with the Environmental Protection Agency on a government-wide federal docket management system. And we partner with nonpartisan organizations such as the Council for Excellence in Government, National Academy of Public Administration, and the Partnership for Public Service.
Now, Linda, would you expand on something we previously mentioned regarding the performance culture at DOT? You talked about the results-oriented performance culture. Could you tell us a little more about that and some of the modal success stories in forging this performance?
That's an excellent question, Pete, and I think it begins with an understanding of how DOT created a performance culture. At DOT, we began by revising our policy. It's the first thing you have to do. And then you have to train the people who are going to be responsible, and those are the managers and supervisors, and then we had to hold them accountable. We are so proud that OPM recognized some of our operating administrations for best practices. For example, FRA, or the Federal Railroad Administration, has some of the highest federal human capital survey scores in the government. So they're doing a lot of good things, and they're doing it right. So we want to leverage this success throughout DOT and the government. We are so fortunate that our secretary, Mary Peters, is personally engaged with performance culture because she realizes that employees are our most important resource, and our employees appreciate that.
Linda, could you tell us about the Chief Human Capital Council and specifically your role in its Subcommittee on Emergency Preparedness? I know you mentioned some of the work that you had done at the Library of Congress, but what is the mission of this committee and how does it seek to ensure federal agencies continue operations during emergencies while safeguarding employees?
The Chief Human Capital Officers Council is what we refer to as the CHICO Council. And it is made up of chief human capital officers from each of the cabinet-level agencies. The council actually gives us the opportunity to come together as a group with OPM, usually monthly, to share information and work towards improving human capital programs. The last meeting was primarily focused on transition planning, and it was one of the best meetings I have attended because it allowed everyone to share their knowledge and experiences in dealing with the upcoming transition. Now, with regard to the Subcommittee on Emergency Preparedness, I chose to be on this committee because I had previous experience, as you said, Pete, in disaster planning and response, having been involved in the response to September the 11th and the anthrax scare. Also, I took part in responding to Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. There were lessons learned that we want to use to plan for the future. Now, of course, we're planning for responding to the threat of a pandemic. Essentially, we assist overall OPM in developing policies and procedures for federal agencies to continue operations in time of crises, to be able to respond to any incident, and naturally, care of and accounting for our staff while keeping the government running is our number one priority. We want to have consistency across the government so that we're not being redundant and we're not reinventing the wheel. We want to use things that are already in place so that, again, we can use the resources that we have to do a better job and continue to provide for the safety of our employees.
Linda, I'd like for you to perhaps look into your crystal ball now. Given the evolution of our national transportation system and infrastructure, how do you envision DOT's human capital and administrative needs evolving over, say, the next 3 to 5 years? And how do you envision specifically your department will need to evolve over that same time period?
You know, for 40 years, DOT has been helping build highways, bridges, and overseeing the highways and seaways and the connectors that form our national transportation system. So one of our focuses has been on engineers. However, we want to attract all disciplines to DOT, from administrative positions to IT, from HR to security, from safety to procurement. And those are just a few. If you think of it, we probably need it at the Department of Transportation. So my vision is to support DOT by remodeling our HR systems to streamline hiring and recruit those with the right talent and skill. And we talked about recruitment earlier in our efforts in that area, but I really want to streamline the hiring process. I want us to be more proactive and rather than reactive. It's important that we help individuals to come to work for the federal government and make it easy for them to come to work for the federal government. If we bring in the best talent consistently, then we are certain to keep up with technology and DOT's needs. And you know what? We are adding even more flexibilities to attract and retain employees, and we want to provide cross-training to every segment of our workforce once they come to work with DOT. So as positions become vacant, we will need to continue to focus our efforts on which positions to fill or reshape, because some positions need to be reshaped and redefined. And we want to do that based on the strategic needs of the department as a whole. So we want to look at it as one DOT again. All the while, there is continued urgency to identify senior staff with technical expertise and communicate and transfer their knowledge to junior staff well in advance of the senior expert's retirement. This is part of our succession plan. Now, there are two things that will not change in 3 or 5 years and will remain constant over time. And the first one is our commitment to and investment in our most vital resource, our people. And the second is our accountability to the American people.
Linda, you've had obviously a very successful career both in the public and the private sector, and clearly you're highly energized around the work that you do. So I'm curious, what advice might you give a person who perhaps, like yourself, is at a point maybe thinking about a career in federal service?
You know, I highly encourage your listeners to consider a career in transportation. DOT offers a wide range of dynamic career opportunities: financial specialists, program analysts, and transportation specialists are just a part of what we call mission-critical occupations. And they are but a few of the great jobs you might consider in DOT. We also offer the more traditional jobs: doctors, lawyers, graphic artists, budget analysts, and IT folks, to name a few. Now, but let me get to the real question. How much do we pay? Well, let me address some of the myths surrounding federal pay. It is true, the federal government is not as competitive as the private sector starting out. We offer starting salaries between $32,000 and $48,000. But after 2 years, our entry-level employees earn $48,000 to $70,000 on average. Now, you know, that's a significant increase. And we provide room to grow in both pay and professional development. Actually, with perhaps a couple of exceptions, government salaries are very competitive. For example, the average salary at DOT is $99,000. So unless you're vying for a position in a law firm or one of the Big Eight, you should expect to do as well or better with a government career. And there are almost no jobs in the private sector, including law and business, which can match government benefits and retirement packages. But let's not just focus on salary. Let's talk about stability and making a difference. Recent reports state that one of the most stable industries is government. While the government provides security and stability, it also provides an opportunity for you personally to make a difference. You know, it's more than a career. It's a vocation. You have the opportunity to do something to make others' lives better. Almost all the studies indicate that young people today want to contribute and to be a part of a team. You know, the average stay in a private sector job today is less than a year. Less than a year. And you know, there's a reason. In the private sector, you might join a piece of a project midstream, and the funding stops. The project ends and the job is over. In the government, you have opportunities to develop your own project, manage it, and see it to the end and beyond. I know that I see that in what I do every day because I am providing the infrastructure which is necessary to support one of the most critical industries in this country and, quite frankly, in the world. I am providing service to my country and making a difference. George Washington Carver, the African-American inventor, took this very seriously when he stated, "No individual has any right to come into the world and go out of it without leaving behind him distinct and legitimate reasons for having passed through it."
That's fantastic. That's perhaps the best plug I've heard for the federal government. That's fantastic, Linda. Unfortunately, we have reached the end of our time here. I do want to thank you for fitting us into your busy schedule. But more importantly, Pete and I would like to thank you for your dedicated service to our country across the various roles that you have held in the federal government.
Thank you so much, Al and Pete. It's been a pleasure to be here. And I, as you know, I am passionate about what I do, and particularly for the Department of Transportation. I work with a wonderful group of people. I'm fortunate to support a secretary and a deputy secretary who are devoted to helping the American people, but also the staff of the Department of Transportation. So I appreciate the opportunity to share about what I do, but also I encourage all of your listeners to apply for jobs within the federal government. We want you and we need you for the future of this country. So thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Linda. This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Linda Jacobs Washington, Assistant Secretary for Administration at the U.S. Department of Transportation. My co-host has been Pete Boyer, director in IBM's Federal Civilian Industry Practice. As you enjoy the rest of your day, please take time to remember the men and women of our armed and civil services abroad who may not be able to hear this morning's show on how we're improving their government, but who deserve our unconditional respect and support. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Albert Morales. Thank you for listening.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to join us every Saturday at 9 a.m. and visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.